Welcome to the Creative Pen Podcast. I'm Joanna Penn, thriller author and creative entrepreneur, bringing you interviews, inspiration, and information on writing, publishing options, and marketing ideas for your book. You can find the episode show notes, your free author blueprint, and lots more information at thecreativepen.com. And that's pen with a double N. And here's the show. Hello, creatives. I'm Joanna Penn, and this is episode number 324 of the podcast. It's Friday, 2nd of June, 2017, as I record this a little early, as I have lots of things going on this weekend. So today I have an interview with Nick Stevenson, and we're talking about how to manage your time and automate your author marketing, something I know we all care a lot about. And I actually have the book Deep Work by Cal Newport on my desk in print. It's one of the few books I own in ebook print and audiobook, along with Stephen Pressfield's Turning Pro. I think that's actually the only other book I have in three formats. Maybe Stephen King's On Writing as well. But I have these books on my desk to remind me that I should be focusing on creation instead of busy work and saying no more often. And I struggle with this a lot, and particularly admire how Nick is able to focus and get so much done and leverage his time so much more. And he has three children, including a new baby. So we talk about that. That's coming up. In publishing news this week, it's all audio all the time. Three stories about audio this week. ACX has opened up to authors from Canada and Ireland. This is pretty exciting. I know a lot of Canadians have been quite annoyed that they haven't been able to get into ACX. So Canada and Ireland, and I would only presume that Australia and Germany would be next in line. Now, that's just entirely based on the type of markets they are, but obviously Germany would be foreign language, but really interesting that Canada and Ireland, and obviously US and UK now available on ACX. So go and sort out your audio if you are in those countries. Also, the Digital Reader reported that Audible has launched a $5 million fund to commission new works from emerging playwrights, not for the stage, but for people's headphones and speakers. So basically, they are playwrights can apply for grants to cover industry standards for new commissions and the cost of production. So I think that's really amazing because, you know, last week I talked to Adam Gaines about his one act play, one that went on to help him get film productions. And I think that playwrights have had a really tough deal for a long time. You know, people have sold plays to radio and that type of thing, but audiobooks could be the thing that makes, you know, playwrights actually have more of a viable income stream from their plays, because not many playwrights actually get their plays put on. And even if they do, the money may or may not be there at all. So I think this is really exciting. So yeah, links are in the show notes as ever. But yeah, so Audible launching the $5 million fund for emerging playwrights. And finally, Fuse Literary, agency that specializes in working with indie authors, announced that author Brian D. Anderson is the first indie author to get a six-figure audiobook deal by Audible for books 7 and 8 in his best-selling Godling Chronicles series. So a couple of interesting things here. First of all, I hadn't even heard of a six-figure audiobook deal, like full stop, let alone for indies. I mean, that's amazing. And for books 7 and 8 in a series. Now, I'm presuming this is a fantasy series, and certainly these longer fantasy books do really well on audio. Listeners love longer books. My husband Jonathan really loves listening to long fantasy stories on audio. And it's not quite fantasy, but he just bought Shogun with an Audible credit, and it's 53 hours long. Now, that's a hell of a deal for one audio credit. And it's pretty hard for those of us who have like a 6 hour audio to compete with that, which is certainly what I'm finding with fiction. Short fiction is a much harder sell than longer fiction on audio. So really interesting. It's different for nonfiction, by the way. My nonfiction does pretty well in audio, even though it's shorter. So certainly there's a behavior with fiction listeners, but yeah, that's awesome. Loads of stuff happening. So I finished the edits on how to market a book this week. And in fact, yesterday I hit the wall. I just collapsed because I've been working so hard on it. It's so much has changed, and doing the detailed editing this whole thing has taken me about 3 weeks longer than expected. And because I tend to schedule a lot, it's been pretty crazy. So I'm really happy that the edits are done, have gone to the editor and a beta reader who's in our niche. So once I get those comments back, I will be finishing the edits and getting the book to the studio for audiobook recording. So How to Market a Book, the third edition, will be available on 6th of July. And the ebook and the print book will be then, and hopefully the audiobook, but we'll see. It might be a week or so later for the audiobook because I'm a bit late, as I said. If you are a Platinum Patreon supporter, I will be emailing you with early access. So keep an eye out for that. And if you read at Kobo, you can get 30% off How to Market a Book using the pre-order promo code MARKET30, MARKET30, when you check out of that pre-order on Kobo. So just go to find How to Market a Book and it will be there. So yes, yesterday I did have a day off. It's quite rare for me to have a whole day off because, you know, there's a lot of maintenance with the business. I mean, as in around my house, I have days off when we go away. You know, we've just booked another walking holiday and things. So when I do those type of trips, I don't work. But when I'm around the house, I often at least log on and just do email and all the things you have to do to keep a business running. But yesterday I just took everything, the day off digital, and ended up at a bookstore and bought a load of print books. Now, this is interesting. I'm finding my behavior around print for nonfiction. I don't buy fiction in print. I like reading fiction on my Kindle. But with nonfiction, I'm finding that I'm buying more nonfiction in print because I lose track of them in my bought list on Kindle. So I've started buying even hardbacks. Now, this is weird behavior from me. I don't know what's going on, but it might be because I bought a new reading chair. And this is actually an interesting point. I was talking to somebody about, and he was asking me how come he can't, you know, work on his book. How he sets an intention to write, he sits down and ends up watching YouTube videos. And I'm like, well, I think it's because the habit of where you are doing things like watching YouTube videos, if you sit down to write and you try, you know, your mind is like, oh, when I sit here, I usually watch YouTube videos. So what you have to do is kind of hack your habits. So when I go to the cafe and plug my, you know, put my headphones on and I start writing, if I'm at this desk where I am now, I'm usually doing business stuff, podcasting, blogging, email, all the things that you do for admin-y stuff. So when I read, fiction, I'm usually in bed. So I've got my Kindle, and I've been wanting to read more nonfiction more seriously because I've noticed that my reading time has been cut down a lot. So I thought I need a special place for reading, which I know is weird, but I ended up buying a really nice armchair. So now I have my reading chair, and I'm using that chair to be like, okay, when I'm in this chair, I'm going to read books and take notes and, you know, think more. I need to think more rather than get stuck in busy work all the time. So yesterday I read a really great book about dark travel, and yes, it ended up being research for my map series, which I'm aiming to start writing in July. But it was relaxing in a different way, and I really enjoyed it. So there you go. That's me trying to hack my habits and read more. And hopefully that will help you. Before I start that book, it's interesting now because I've got three author brands. I'm trying to sort of, you know, work on one, then work on the next one, then work on the next one. And like, if I do that, then every year there should be a couple of books per author name. Now, I don't recommend you do this. It's absolutely crazy. I mean, really, what am I doing? It's mental. But anyway, the Sweet Romance, I've got the second Sweet Romance to edit and get out there in the next few weeks. And what's been lovely is how thrilled my mum is. And she doesn't listen to the show, so I'm going to tell you. But what's crazy with people who retire is they can be, well, they generally are still really smart, they have energy when they're younger, retired. And I know many of you listening are retired, so you all agree with me. But my mum is 70 this year. She's energetic. She's, you know, clever. She's desperate to do something with her time. And she's tried different things, volunteering and helping out with family and all this, but she wants to work. Like, she likes working. I am my mother's daughter and we are workaholics and we love working. We like producing things. And what's been so lovely with this sweet romance, and you know that I resisted doing this because, well, I don't really read the genre. I've started reading more, to be honest, but it's just been really lovely to see how much she loves writing. And I think it's sad in a way because I really wish that I had encouraged her to start a while ago. But I mean, obviously part of the reason she started is because I've proven that this can make some money. And so she's gone through sort of 2 years of writing that first book and now she's really speeding up. So I just want to encourage you, if you're listening and you haven't done this yet, like you haven't finished that book, that first book, and that first book is so important. It may not make you any money at all. It may be a pile of crap, but if you finish a book, it will show you what you can do next time. And this has been really amazing for my mum and I'm very excited. So at the end of this month, I'll be paying her first royalties for April, and she is so excited. I've told her how much I'm going to pay her. And she's so excited because, of course, she has a pension, but she hasn't earned her own money as such for a while. And she is just loving it. So there's a little encouragement if you are retired or if you have parents who are retired or, you know anyone who is like, you know, wants to get into this, then please encourage them to do so because it really is the best time to be a writer. And with all this expansion into other countries, the market is just growing and growing. So exciting times, everybody. Okay, so useful stuff. Vellum has relaunched this week and now has print formatting incorporated. So you can either buy it just for ebook formatting or for print book formatting as well. And I love Vellum. It is amazing. I use it for everything. All my formatting, and I will probably do one of my own print books with this new version of Vellum, but I actually like paying professionals for formatting for print because it's so finickety. But if you want to do your own print formatting as well as ebooks, check out the new Vellum, and my link is thecreativepen.com/Vellum, V-E-L-L-U-M, and it is Mac only, but there has been the word on the street that you can use Mac in cloud, which is cloud, you know, provision, and you can use Vellum that way. So that is not an official recommendation. That is unofficial, but it is a way to get Vellum. Also useful, you have missed the live version, but this last weekend, the weekend of 3rd of June, the Alliance of Independent Authors Fringe event for Book Expo, it happened live, but you can get the replay sessions, which are awesome, at just go to selfpublishingadvice.org and you'll see all the fringe sessions that they include art and money, pricing your book for international sales with Ingram, using InstaFreebie, your online book marketing plan, how to sell poetry in a digital era, which is pretty cool, marketing your memoir, secrets of authors earning over $5,000 per month with Ricky and Ferrell from FreeBooksy, creating a media kit, using Goodreads, marketing audiobooks, and the fundamentals of Facebook and Amazon ads. All of these sessions are free and there's lots of giveaways and they're all on the Alliance of Independent Authors blog at selfpublishingadvice.org. And also useful stuff. So Nick and I will talk about this in the interview coming up, but we are doing a webinar on Wednesday, the 14th of June, 3 p.m. Eastern, 8 p.m. UK. And yes, if you register, you can get the replay, and that's all about automating your author marketing. And those of you who've been on the webinars with me and Nick before know that it is a fun time. We have a bit of a laugh. And I think this is actually the only live webinar Nick is doing for this. As we will talk about, he optimizes his time incredibly well. But I was like, no, we have such fun. You've got to come and do one with me. So we are doing one. So that all the details are at thecreativepen.com/Nick17, N-I-C-K-1-7. Okay, so thanks for all your emails and tweets and comments this week. Patty Brower says, trying to listen to the latest podcast, but a certain furry monster is interfering, and sent a lovely picture of her cat and her dog with the podcast on her phone. Lynn Milford saying, an inspiring morning commute with the latest podcast with Adam Gaines on screenwriting. Oh, Edwin Downward, who basically nudged me and said, where's the podcast? We had a bit of a glitch with the feed after the HTTPS implementation, but all good. And it's actually really great to have Nate Hofelder from the Digital Reader on board to help me with the tech stuff. I have been doing it all myself for, you know, with some bigger outsourcing when I do bigger projects, but all the sort of day-to-day fixes I've done myself since 2008. So I am so pleased. I mean, really, it's one of those things I should have outsourced ages ago, but it's hard to find someone you can trust to help. And since Nate's in our industry and understands all this stuff and is a podcast listener, this is working out really well. So I'm very happy. But Edwin Downward says, my weekly fix is finally here. Thank you. Trip to the bunny rescue wouldn't have been the same. So that's cool. AR Robinson says, just listen to your interview with Adam Gaines. By far my favorite interview. Very insightful behind the scenes look in LA. And it's so interesting because I get emails and tweets and things about each show, and it's so fascinating how different people like different episodes. And it used to be that I kind of judged them and said, oh, that one was useful, that wasn't so useful or whatever. But I've just decided now to just put stuff out there into the world. And some of you will like it, some of you will fast forward, and hey, whatever, it's up to you. But I'm really glad that you enjoyed that. And finally, Danny Johnston says, bad week for writing, paralyzed with self-doubt. Fortunately, I'm rereading The Successful Author Mindset. So thank you, Danny. I'm really glad that that's helping you. I need to reread it myself because as I sort of head towards my own massive fiction project, the next fiction project, new series, I'm just like, oh my goodness, this is huge. So I'll probably read it myself. Okay, so today's show is sponsored by Cobra Writing Life, and I'll play a word from them in a minute. And remember, you can get the pre-order for How to Market a Book on Kobo by using, with 30% off, using the promo code MARKET30. So thank you to our sponsors for that, and we'll play a little ad soon. So this corporate sponsorship pays for the hosting and transcription, but my time in producing the show is primarily sponsored by you guys. So a big thank you to all the people supporting on Patreon. I really appreciate your support, especially to those people who've been supporting for over 18 months now. That means so much to me. And thanks to new patrons, Alison Williford and Junetta Key. Like the tweets and emails, it really demonstrates that you enjoy the show and want it to continue. And on Patreon, you can support the show with just a couple of dollars, less than a coffee a month, or even a couple of coffees a month if you're feeling generous, and you'll get an extra monthly Q&A audio, including the entire backlist if you can't get enough of my voice. And I'll be recording the June Q&A audio in the next couple of weeks. So get your questions in if you are a Patreon supporter. And if you're platinum, you'll be getting How to Market a Book 3rd edition early as well. Super bonus. So you can support the show at patreon.com, patreon.com/thecreativepen. Okay, is a little word from Kobo, and then we'll be into the interview.
Hello, creatives. This is Mark Lefebvre, Director of Author Relations at Kobo. I wanted to remind you of something that authors often forget when they're only thinking about the world's longest river and their publishing strategy. It's the fact that Kobo doesn't have a royalty cap at $9.99 US dollars. This means you can price books higher than $10 and still earn 70%. Some of the highest earning Kobo Writing Life published titles this past year came from authors with large box sets of their entire catalogs, from authors like Mark Dawson, Barbara Freedy, Bella Andre, and yes, even your dynamic host, Joanna Penn. Imagine what you earn when you sell a box set for $30 or $40 and 70% of that goes to you. It sure beats trying to play the volume game when earning 35 cents per unit sale. Tips and information like this can be found at KoboWritingLife.com, where you can also easily click over to do your publishing through Kobo Writing Life's portal. Looking forward to seeing you there. And now back to your host, Joanna Penn.
Today, I'm back with Nick Stevenson. Hi, Nick.
Hello.
It's good to have you back on the show. Just a little introduction. Nick is a best-selling thriller author with the Leopold Blake series. He's also the creator of the Your First 10,000 Readers video course, helping authors automate their book marketing, and will soon be expanding into software and many other exciting things. But Nick, the most important thing in your life right now, you've just had a third baby.
Yeah, the house is like crawling with babies at the moment. It's insane. They have all gone out now, which is like the best timing ever. I shooed them off to go somewhere fun. So you shouldn't hear any screaming, shouting, hitting, dog wailing, or things crashing and breaking. So this is like
a quiet time.
Live TV. Yeah, it's brilliant.
Yeah, you probably wish you were having a sleep instead of being on the show. But, you know, since you're here. So I think what's interesting about this is that you're a family man. Like, you know, you have three little kids and lovely wife, obviously, I've met, lovely. And you're an introvert as well. And in fact, I remember you told me once that, like, you're just very happy to stay at home. You'd rather not do any of these author events or speaking or traveling or whatever. You actually just like being at home with your family, which is really cool. And many people listening feel the same way. So, but you've done incredibly well in the last few years, right? So how do you manage to run your business in a way that you want to, that suits you as a personality?
I think it's a real advantage in some ways, because you know how people, they'll consider themselves, I am an introvert or I am an extrovert. And this is the label that I apply to myself. Therefore, I'm not going to do all these things that an introvert doesn't like to do. Mm. And yeah, to a certain degree, that's true. But I've always thought of it as, it's like a preference. Like, you know, I feel that my preference is to spend more time with fewer people and to, you know, spend a lot of time inside my own head and doing things, you know, kind of quite a small sphere of people. That's not to say that I can't go to a conference and I can't go to an event and, you know, put on a show and get up in front of people. It's just, that's not my default position. So I kind of did all that and it was kind of cool, but it's very tiring for me. And I'm sure a lot of people feel the same way. You know, perfectly capable of going to a book signing or get up on stage or deliver a presentation or go to a party, but it's very tiring. And, you know, you think about it all day. So it's like, you know, I've got a live thing going on at 8 o'clock. That's going to be on my mind all day. And then it's going to be on my mind all the day after. And it's very, very tiring. So I wanted to find a way that I could get sort of similar results by not having to go there. Do you see what I mean? Like, and this is kind of where the idea of marketing on kind of automating marketing systems comes into play, because, you know, when you think about what does an author do to get the word out about their books, the kind of traditional viewpoint is, well, they'll go to book signings and they'll have parties and launch parties and their publishers will put these shindigs on for them, you know, and they'll do these TV interviews and, you know, all the stuff that these, you know, the traditionally published authors get put on this kind of publicity track. I'm thinking to myself all this time, you know, this sounds awful. I cannot think of anything I would rather less do. So how can we get a similar sort of end result from doing something that doesn't require me to go in, you know, go out all places? So that was kind of the founding principle and that led me to focusing on that, because that's what I wanted to do. So I mean, it was a big benefit.
Yeah, and we'll come back to some more of the details in a minute, but there are a couple of things. So one, this saying no, and I was at Crime Fest, and you've been at Crime Fest last weekend, and as you say, very tired. And it was funny because I said to this guy said, oh, you know, you look really busy at the moment. And I'm like, I am. And that is my fault because I haven't said no enough. And there's almost this graph, isn't there? When you first start out, you say yes to everything. And because nobody wants you. So you just say, yes, I'll do anything for free. Anytime, just tell me and I'll be there. And then there's a point at which you have to say no. And I think you reach that point. I'm still struggling with that point. But how do you manage to say no to all the things that I know people ask of you?
Well, I always think to myself, you know, it's kind of like a test. If I say yes to this, is it going to be fun? Am I going to like doing it? Is it going to get me more sales? Is it going to get me more readers? And if it's not going to do one of these things, then I don't go. So, you know, when someone says, you know, do you want to do this, you know, virtual summit chat thing where we'll spend 2 hours talking about blah, 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 I'm thinking, doesn't sound fun. Not going to get any sales from that. Probably not going to get any readers from that. So no, I'm not going to do that. But if someone, you know, comes to me and says specifically that I've got this thing I want to do, here's exactly how it's going to go, and I think it's going to do one of those three things, I'll usually say yes. But nobody ever does, because people want you to, you know, they want you to come to their conference, or they want you to be on their, you know, on their show, or they want you to do, you know, they want you to read their book and give them your opinion on it. And it's like, no, I'm not going to do any of that. So it's just being very kind of, disciplined with, you know, saying this is my time that I could be spending with my kids, or I could be using to work on my business. Should I be spending it on this instead? And usually the answer is no. So it's quite an easy decision sometimes. But I think I kind of forgot about the compulsion to make people happy a while ago. It's like, I don't really mind if you don't like me. I'm going to have to say no, unfortunately. Oh, I try to be polite about it.
Yeah, no, and that's the thing. And I struggle with this all the time. And it's good, always good talking to you, because you're one of my kind of mentors around this focus, which I struggle with. So this discipline and this saying no, I mean, do you have discipline around the hours that you work? Like, do you say this time is family time? Or because many, you know, one of the biggest emails I get every day is I only have X amount of time. And most people with a day job and a family who are not doing this full time, as you and I both once did, we both once had day jobs that were not these businesses. Yeah, exactly. So, you know, do you have like hours blocked out? How do you manage that time schedule that you have?
I think I could be a lot more organized, and I was getting to that point. And then the baby came and sort of tore it all up and was sick on it and all this kind of stuff. It's just gone out the window. But I kind of think in more terms of, you know, what has to get done by what point. So it's, if I have a task that needs to be done by next Wednesday, I have a vague idea of how long it's going to take. I will block out some time between now and then to get it done. Mm. But at the moment, it's a bit difficult to say, right, between 10 and 12, I'm going to work, because something might happen that I have to give my attention to somewhere else. Mm. But in a perfect world where the baby was looked after and happy, and the kids were happy to go to school and didn't have tantrums and all this kind of lovely stuff, it would be picking out these hours. But going back to the day job thing, is I found actually that when I was working a day job and I only had an hour before going to work, or an hour at lunch and maybe an hour in the evening, that I would get more done in those 3 hours than taking a whole day now. Because I can sit down at my desk, you know, on Wednesdays, for example, I basically get the whole day, sort of like 9 till 4 o'clock, when I don't get any interruptions. And I found that when I sit down from 9 till 4, I get very little done, compared to when I sit down from 11 till 12, when I can just get lots of stuff done. Mm. So I find, you know, it's, if you have got a full-time job, you know, embrace that to a degree, because you can carve out an hour and you can get so much done if you just sit down and treat that as your sacred time. And I found that an incredible shift to having all the time in the world and getting much less done compared to that, you know, that hour of focus. Mm. I think using that focus really helped me to then be focused later on as well. So not necessarily a bad thing.
Yeah, I agree. And so that scheduling time, and I use Google Calendar now, which, you know, I'm kind of now, you know, always wanting to know what's happening, and you can plan years in advance, which I love. but the next thing after kind of carving those hours out is many authors are looking to start hiring their first virtual assistant, their first team member. And I know that this is something you've done with your business. There comes a point where, and I know some authors won't be here, but I know a lot of people who have a day job are thinking, maybe I could have someone for an hour a month. Like, you can just start there, right? So how did you make that shift from doing everything yourself to hiring your first team members and kind of automating that side of your business?
It was bit by bit, because I still love to have a huge amount of control over the end product. It's like, I want to be involved in, if it's a book, you know, I want to be choosing the cover designs, and I want to be getting really involved with that and how it looks on the inside. And obviously I've written it, but then I want to go through the editing and all this stuff as well. And on the nonfiction course side, you know, I'm recording the videos myself and doing the editing and just doing everything website related and everything. And I like that, but you can't realistically do that and do all the day-to-day humdrum stuff, like answering emails and fixing things that break and all this, you know, fun stuff that is not fun. So I had to bring someone in to just do those things that I didn't need to be involved in. And over time, I found that I could give away more and more things as I became less kind of uptight about micromanaging everything. And it was a real journey going from, okay, you know, bringing someone in and your only job is to answer emails. And I said to them, you know, if the answer doesn't fall into one of these templates I'm going to write for you, send it to me. And then over the months, it became, you know, this person became more and more independent. And now kind of I don't touch a large part of that backend stuff, which is really cool. But, you know, they say, you know, the way that you run your business will change once the number of employees in your business, I think it's multiples of three. So the way you work, you can show one other person how to work that way. So there's like two yous. When you get to three people, it changes entirely and you have to come up with a new system. So we had to process, document and systemize everything, get new software so that a new person could come in and take over that role. And it'll change again when we get to nine people, 27 people, you know, it's going to change over time. So don't be worried that when you're bringing in someone for an hour a week, that it's going to be a bit of a culture shock at first, because you're going to have to spend time training this person how you like things done. And as they get more hours and you maybe bring more people in, you're going to have to adapt the way you work to suit those people as well. So, because you kind of have a responsibility to them as well as to your customers and readers as well. So it's very interesting. Yeah. Baby steps.
Yeah, baby steps. And I mean, I've done it a bit differently in that I have actually loads of people now, but who all do one thing.
Yeah.
Or, you know, like the podcast now, this show, I think is four people. Work on this show now, and each of them has their smaller task. Yeah, that's right. So four
doing people. A great job, guys.
Yeah, thank you for sorting this out. But I obviously did it myself for years and did everything same as you. But that ability to let go, like you know, you have a big business now. You have a seven figure business, right? So this is not you spending every hour that there is in the world working, you know, on your business. There has to be that point where you have to let it go. And you mentioned systems there. So did you come up with the systems before you found anybody, or did you kind of go, I'm so overwhelmed, I need somebody, and then kind of just do it from there?
Well, we kind of did everything the long way, the manual way. So for example, when we first launched the author marketing course, it was just I'd send a series of emails with some videos, and I would teach people these concepts that I'm trying to teach them. And then at the end of the video series, it's like, you know, take what you've learned from this and go into the world, or you can come and enroll in the course, and we'll take you through it step by step and give you much more handholding. And that went really, really well. But I couldn't do that all the time. That's something I could do maybe once or twice a year, because it's so much personal effort and it gets really difficult to write those emails from scratch and do it all and get involved. So we worked on a way to systemize that and automate that so that we can make sure people are still getting all the information, getting all the value, getting into the course, everything's working, but we don't have to physically touch anything. So, you know, just silly things like the software we were using an email software that couldn't tell whether or not someone had bought it. So it's like, okay, so they're going to keep getting the wrong emails. They're not going to get welcome emails. And it's just like, this is like basic stuff. Why doesn't this do that? So we had to build like all these different plugins and add additions. And in the end, we just moved to a different piece of software. But it was just an example of that, something not working the way we insisted it did. So we moved. And of course, everything gets more expensive, because you've got the higher sort of enterprise level software that you need to use. Then you have to hire, I had to hire a team to run that. So I actually have a team who handle my email marketing software behind the scenes. You will never see them. You will never see a word that they've written in your life, but they're back there, and I have to pay them, and I have to pay different people to do different things. But it's all worth it, because it allows me to have more fun, make more sales, get more readers. So it's all worth it.
Yeah. And this, I feel like, you know, you and I have known each other for a good number of years now. I want to say like 5 years, I think.
Probably something like that.
Something like that. Yeah. But like when we first met and you were writing your first book, you still had a day job, right? I think you only had one kid.
It's like I've always had a child of some description.
Yeah, you have. But I think what's interesting, you know, people talking about the maturation of the author space, and we're seeing this, like I see this with the SPP guys, you know, we see this in the level of discussions in the author forums around different marketing tactics and things like that. But the development of your business, as you said, and my own business, it, as you say, is incremental year on year. So people listening who are kind of just at the beginning, you don't go from first book to, you know, seven figure business with loads of employees.
To kind of go back to what I did the first time I started the business was I thought I had to have all those things before I even had a product. So the author equivalent of that would be you want to write a book. So you hire a VA, you hire a cover designer, you hire an editor, you get a website, you spend all this money before you've written a word. And there's so many people who do that. And because you think that to be successful in business, you have to look like a real business from the get-go. So let's get it all done ahead of time so that when we release our first book, we look like a publishing company. Don't.
Yeah, it's not necessary.
Don't do that. It's bad.
No, it's not at all. And I think that's where we'll come back down to now is like the people who are starting out, because you've got a team, you've got these systems in place, but what you sort of recommend for authors is going down to the automation at a much lower level. Now, it's still the same principle. It's like you say, having more fun, which we'll say is writing more books, and things like maybe you want to be emailing with your readers. But what are the things that, you know, some of the aspects of that automation that authors can put in place, even if they are nearer the beginning, and the software that they could use that isn't going to need a whole team to run?
Absolutely. The one thing that I try to teach everybody is the principle I call reader magnets, which is something that I shared with you, like when we first put it in place and we were seeing some results, I kind of went out and sort of pimped it around a bit. And it's a very simple idea, is that you want to get people off of Amazon and Kobo and iBooks and all these other places. Not that they're bad, but that customer belongs to Amazon. So someone who downloads a book on Amazon, that's Amazon's customer. Amazon can decide what kind of stuff to show to them, and their interaction with you depends entirely on Amazon. Nothing necessarily wrong with that, but if you want to be able to control your audience and who sees what and, you know, how many sales you're making, you're going to have to build an audience of your own. And that means having an email list, essentially. I mean, there are other things you can do, but the email list is kind of the easiest thing and the most effective thing long term. So the idea is simple. You know, in your book that's on Amazon, put a little link in there and a graphic that says, do you want to get more cool stuff like what you're reading now? Click this link, they click the link and they can sign up to your email list. And in return, you deliver them the cool thing that you promised. So an example would be, you know, like you write in a series, book one could then say, you know, if you want to get book two for free, come join my readers list, or you can buy it full price for $3.99. And so most people who like the book are going to go get it for free. They're on your email list, and that's an email list full of people, you know, like your stuff. So that's kind of the easiest segmenting in the universe. And that's like the very basic concept that I try and get people doing from the get-go. And most people aren't doing it. You know, most people kind of, you know, when you talk about marketing, they start obsessing about, you know, getting on Twitter and sending out links to buy books, and same on Facebook, and going in forums and saying, hey, I just released a book, can everyone buy it and leave a review, please? And they immediately get banned and kicked off and they wonder what happened. But it's as simple as getting someone off Amazon onto your email list and sending them cool stuff. And you don't even have to spend money on software to do all that stuff. I mean, we recommend MailChimp at MailChimp.com can do pretty much all of that without you having to pay anything. So nothing stopping you, and you can get it all set up and ready to go in a few hours and you're good to go. Cool.
And actually, I mean, the other thing I was thinking the other day is, again, when we got started, well, when I first set up my email list back in the day, back in 2008, it wasn't easy. Things weren't easy. But I literally think there's no excuse now, because, you know, there's so much software that makes it much, much easier for authors. I mean, there's so many tools that we can use that make it easier, that it's more the resistance that people have. And I think maybe you could talk to this in terms of mindset. People have a resistance to the things that are hard. And it seems hard to someone who's never done a website or set anything up. You know, if you rewind back to the time where you were like, oh my goodness, WordPress, like what the hell? you know, so how, you know, what would you say to people who's like their mindset is, oh, I'm just not technical. All I want to do is write. And I mean, I still hear this, you know, you'd think that by now everyone would be on the wagon, but they're not, as you say. So when people feel that resistance, and I have it too, you know, what would you say to that?
I think this is something that we deal with because I do some webinars like live teaching where we get, you know, 500, 1,000 people to sign up for these trainings that I do. And it's the same thing every time. It's like, you know, you ask them a question at the beginning, you know, I just want to write. I don't understand technology. It's all very confusing. I don't understand. By the end of it, they're all going, oh my God, I never thought of it that way. That's amazing. I'm going to go do this. And it's just a case of leading people through that mental process of, okay, I'm not just going to throw technology at you and software and all this automation stuff from the beginning. I'm going to take you on a bit of a journey. I'm going to tell you a story about how this works from where you are now, which is, you know, maybe you're writing a book, you've written a couple of books and you don't know what to do, to the point where you can see in one glance people getting your book, downloading, leaving reviews, sales, creeping up month after month after month. That's where we want to get you to. So the story I kind of tell people is, you know, this is what most people believe. And the thing I always hear is, you know, if you go on like an author blog or forum or whatever, people always say, no, the only way to get sales is just to write more books. That's all you need to do. Just write more books. And this is always kind of grated with me, because in what industry does just having more products relate to sales? You know, think of it like you're a shop on the high street. Nobody is coming in. No one's buying anything. Do you order more stock? Do you expand your warehouse? No. When the bookstores were going out of business because of Amazon and because of Kindle and all this stuff, do you think they just ordered a bunch more stock in and thought, well, we've got more books, so we'll sell more? You know, it doesn't work like that. If there's no audience there, it doesn't matter how many books you have, because people, you know, if there's no one there, no one's going to read it. So you have to think of a way of getting that audience while you're writing more books, because, you know, if you have that audience, more books is going to help. But you have to have the audience in the first place. So I always start off saying, you know, this is a big thing that people believe and it's a complete myth. And this is why. And I take them through, you know, basically what we've just said, and then say, well, instead of that, how about we think about the audience itself? How do we grow an audience? And then I explain, you know, well, think about where your readers are. In terms of ebooks, you know, 60% of them are going to be on Amazon, and 40% of them are going to be spread across the other ebook stores. As an example, the percentages might be a bit, but it might be 80-20, whatever. Most people are going to be there. So if people are on Amazon, we want to get them off Amazon and onto your mailing list so that you can then contact them when you have something to sell later. So I just taught them through this. We create like a three-step process. You know, how are you going to get more traffic, more people seeing your book on Amazon and the other stores? How are you going to convert that traffic into someone who signs up to your email list? And then once you have that email list, how are you going to turn those subscribers into paying fans? How are you going to sell to them without being like a sleazy salesman? Because that's another big thing as well, is, and you're, you know, an expert example of this, is someone who says, I hate the idea of selling. But there's different ways of selling. You know, you're not trying to convince someone to buy something they don't need by trickery. You're introducing them to something they want. And it's just the way that you do that. You see what I mean? So it's, an example I use is like being at a restaurant. And we actually went to a restaurant for someone's birthday, sat down, the waiter brought us the menus and then just left. They knew it was our birthday. They didn't offer champagne, didn't offer drinks, came to take the orders, didn't ask for any side dishes, didn't come back to desserts or anything like that. And in that context, that's considered bad service. But it's selling, because people want those things. So you just have to get into that mindset where the way you sell is by giving people what they want, not by tricking them. And that's how we try and get people's mindset to look at it that way. What kind of language you need to use? How do you build trust? How do you get people excited? Because many people, you know, if they build an email list, they'll send out an email going, my book's ready, buy it. And then they go, well, no one bought my book. This email list is rubbish. It doesn't work. There is a process to follow, to build people up towards it and to treat them with respect and build trust and build that brand, so that you get to the point where your book is nearly going to be released and people are emailing you going, where's the link? I want to buy the book now. Is there a pre-order? You know, when's it going to be out? That's what we want to get to. And that's the story I tell in the live trainings and the recorded ones that we have. because so many people think that it's just a technology thing. Mm. And it's not. Technology is a tool. You know, it's disposable. It doesn't matter what you use. It's the principles and the understanding of the readers, what the readers want, how to fit that into your lifestyle and what you want from your business that's more important. And that's the journey that we take people on. And by the end of it, you know, most people think, actually, I never thought of it that way. This makes perfect sense. And a lot of them go out and start doing it, which is really cool. So it makes me happy.
Yeah. Well, a couple of things on that then, because you obviously the reader magnets is you do have a focus on a perma-free book that then leads into the reader magnet on your website that they sign up for. So what about people who are in KDP Select? Because this is like a big thing right now for many people, is the focus on KU and how to build an email list if you are using Kindle Unlimited. And I mean, in that sense, having more books and then just rotating through, you know, the 5 days for free, that could be the answer. I mean, it's not perma-free, it's just 5 days. So what do you say to people who make that choice around exclusivity?
Well, that's exactly it. I mean, the example that I give is, you know, we've got that reader magnet, that offer inside the book that says, hey, if you get off Amazon and then come over to me, I'll give you this free book or this free chapter or whatever it is. That's the concept. But what we want to do is get as many people as possible doing that, right? Mm-hmm. So maybe one or two people a day do it. Maybe we want to get that to 10, 20 people a day. So the way we do that is by increasing the amount of people seeing the book in the first place, right? So there's more people seeing the book, more people opening the book, more people taking you up on your offer, joining your mailing list, et cetera, et cetera. So the suggestion is, and my recommendation is to use perma-free. So you've always got a free book that's always being downloaded, that's always got this offer in it. And because if you have a free book, it's being downloaded, you know, 50, 100 times more often than a 99-cent book, it makes sense because you're not making money from the download, but you will make money from it later because you've got 50, 100 times as many people on your mailing list. That's great. But that's just one tactic. You know, we're taking the principle and going, this is one tactic you can use. Another, you know, example is Facebook advertising or Amazon advertising, Google ads, blog ads, doing blog posts, whatever. The point is, have something to get people on your mailing list, and that will make a big difference. So if you're in Kindle Unlimited and you can't have perma-free, there's a couple of options. You could, like you said, use 5 days a month. Every 90 days as part of your terms. You could tie that in with some paid advertising to get more people, get more ranking. That could work. If you've got more than one book, you could, like you said, cycle through that. You could have a mix. So if you've got 5 books in your series, you could have 4 of them in KU and then have 1 of them on all of the stores and make it perma-free. So it's going to be a bit weird if you're on, you know, another store and there's only 1 book there out of 5, but you could get them onto your mailing list and get them other ways of getting those books. So it's just free, gets you lots of traffic. So that's a really cool way of getting more people on your email list. But it's just a means to an end. So it could be, you know, it could be any tactic that's going to get you more traffic is going to be cool. So Noisetrade is an example of a site where you can upload your books and it'll get emailed out to their readers and they can download it for free. Again, have your offer in there, get them over to your mailing list. Same with InstaFreebie, same with, you know, any one of a dozen other paid promotions out there. There's lots and lots of options for you. As long as you remember that core principle, get them off Amazon or wherever they are onto your mailing list and then turn them into buyers. That's what we want to do.
And then, I mean, I think one of the things that people often struggle with is the, you know, well, I've seen some backlash, I guess, in some of the author forums. I have a massive list and nobody's buying. Have we reached peak email list on some of the, you know, like InstaFreebie, for example, or, you know, some, and again, this is totally anecdotal. Some people are reporting this. I'm certainly not. But there's, you know, and I don't know whether this is just a mindset thing. People are just finding ways to have issues, or is it the quality of the connection that they're making with that email list?
Yeah, it's a mix. I mean, it all depends on the specifics. So if someone spent 2 months building up an email list of, let's say, 500 people, and they send out an email and 10 people buy their book, let's say, then that might be really disappointing for them. But if they've got a mailing list of 20,000 and the same percentage of people buy, that's really exciting. It's all a numbers game. And, you know, I'd have to understand, you know, what did you do for your launch? How many emails did you send? Did you bother to get people excited? Did you, you know, overcome their objections? Did you look at what their buying habits were? Did you track the number of clicks, track the number of opens? Are they more than usual, higher than usual, lower than usual? You know, what went wrong? Actually, are your expectations wrong? If you made 5 sales from a mailing list of 50 people, as an example, 10% is not bad. That's pretty good. So actually, just alter your expectations. That percentage should hold up as your list gets bigger. What genre are you in? There's many different things to talk about, but email marketing has been going on for, 30 years, and it's not peaked as an industry. So it's very unlikely that, you know, the independent author community is somehow magically peaked on its own as a subgroup of the industry as a whole. But you just have to remember that in the same way that throwing out a link on Twitter or Facebook isn't going to get you very far, just emailing someone out of the blue and saying, my book's ready, go buy it, isn't going to work overly well either. So it all depends on what relationship have you built with that audience. Mm. Where have you got that audience from? Did you just buy an email list off someone? That's the worst possible example. That'd be awful. You're not going to get any results. If you're getting them from InstaFreebie is a good example. Is InstaFreebie have a set number of people who download books? And many people have reported that, by their 5th or 6th promotion, they're getting the same people coming back again.
Mm.
That's one issue, but InstaFreebie is growing, and this could be a way to re-engage people who have been on your list a while but aren't active.
Mm.
There's lots of ways that you can use these tools to improve the engagement and click-through rate of your audience. And one example from a recent book launch we did was we offered bonuses for people who picked up the book during a certain time frame. Because one of the big things is procrastination. Like I see, if I say to you, Joanna, there's this great book out, and I send you the link, chances are you don't go, oh, I'm just going to buy that right now.
No, I'll probably sample it. I'll download a sample, and it'll sit on my hundreds of samples list.
Exactly. But if I said, Joanna, this book is really cool, and if you buy it now, they're going to give you another three in the series. But you have to buy it in the next 24 hours.
Mm.
You probably just buy it to make sure you got the bonus and then, go look at it later. But the key thing is that you're taking action now. And so many people miss that out. They send an announcement email out going, book's available, but they don't say why anyone should buy it.
Mm.
It's just here is a book versus here are all the reasons you should buy the book. And if you do it now, I'm going to give you some cool stuff. There's a very good reason why you should buy it now. Maybe it's a price promotion. Maybe it's got a special bonus in it. Maybe it's a combination of the two. And we've seen double the difference between people who do and don't do that. So very useful. And that's just one example of the way that you could be using email to sell better. So when someone says, no one bought my book when I emailed out, it's like, well, let's qualify that slightly and look at what you did. Because there's many reasons why that might be. So it could be anything, but I don't think email's peaked.
Excellent. I'm glad about that. Well, then, I mean, we're almost out of time, but I did want to, you work with a lot of internet entrepreneurs in other niches. You have a lot of connections in the, the people who have some pretty big internet businesses. And I wondered, like you said about email marketing and a lot of the principles around marketing, these things don't change. The tools change. Before email, it was direct mail, as in the post. And obviously people are returning to direct mail in the post because that stands out more in this kind of market. But with the people you're seeing in the internet marketing space, is there anything that people are excited about for 2017? I've heard people now back on the video thing, like, hey, video's the thing, or anything that you're considering for the next year.
One of the things is messenger bots is a big thing, and I don't know if anyone watching this has seen them, but it's where you see an ad on Facebook. And instead of then, sending you something via email, it actually sends you a message inside your messenger, which is kind of cool if you want that message, of course. And we are currently experimenting with that to see if it's going to make any difference. Chances are it will, because the open rates and click rates are a lot higher for messenger than they are for email.
Mm.
But then again, this is a tactic. It may well be effective for 3 months and then fall off a cliff. We don't know. But the key thing is it's effective right now. So let's try it out and see if it's worth hanging on to. That's one example. But again, it's the principle of getting direct communication with someone and delivering them something cool and building trust. It's just the method of delivery is slightly different. So the principles will always be the same.
Mm, that's really interesting. And everyone's like, bots. Do I have to do bots? I don't even look at my blooming messenger. So I'm just so everyone knows, you know, that's not something I'm jumping into. But, you know, it's interesting because one of the things I regret is not jumping into, say, Facebook advertising earlier or Amazon ads earlier. You know, I think there is an early adoption advantage almost. Certainly people are finding that Facebook ads are a lot more expensive now. So, you know, but it's never too late, is it? It's like that the best day to start building your email list, if you haven't already done it, is today.
The thing is if something is going to be, if it's going to last for a year and then get too expensive, I'm not going to regret not doing it because it's not a long-term thing. So if Facebook ads, I mean, I don't believe they have gone to the point where they're unsustainable. I think that they're a good, great way of reaching people, no matter what business you're in. Mm. But let's say, you know, it was effective for a year and then it wasn't. And I'm thinking, you're going, oh, I could have used it for a year. It's like, well, I don't care because I'm looking at my business for the next 40 years. Mm. That's not going to plague my mind too much if it's only going to last a year. This is why I don't worry about BookBub too much. You know, now they're bringing in more ways for you to use them all the time with the advertising that you can pay-per-click advertising you can use now. And that's much more sustainable. Mm. I don't like the idea of BookBub. And this was the thing for people was BookBub was the only time they ever made any sales. Mm. And if they didn't get accepted into BookBub, it was like disaster. This month is just out the window. And that's not a great place to be in either. So same with Facebook. If it's not sustainable, then don't worry about it. But I believe that Facebook is. And, you know, a lot of the big boys of advertising are very sustainable. So nothing to worry about. You know, no. Experiment. Don't get too obsessed with it.
No, exactly. And yeah, I think that's the overarching message, isn't it? It's like some of these, the mindset and the strategies are a longer term thing. The principles, the tools will always change. You know, who knows what will happen in another 5 years, 10 years time, be completely different. Yeah, it'll be your telepathy. I hope not. We are going to do a webinar together, aren't we? And we always have fun. We have a bit of banter as well as teaching. Tell us about that.
Being an introvert is I don't always do very many live webinars. So I do a lot of webinars and then I use them as pre-recorded ways of getting the message out to more people. But I don't do live appearances all that often.
Woohoo!
So this, you and I are doing, I think, definitely the first one of the year and most likely the last one of the year as well. So this is probably going to be the only live webinar that I do this year.
Wow.
So it's going to be special for you and for Joanna's audience as well. So when we talked about that story that I tell, taking people through, you know, this is why we do it the way we do it. Here are some examples and specific ways that you can start building an audience without going crazy or getting obsessed with technology and start seeing results. Mm. That's the story that we tell in the training. And I give specific examples of the software you can use, free software. And we go through the principles and I go through exactly what to do at what stage to go from no readership to building an audience kind of in the background.
Mm.
So it's building up while you're working on something else, whether that's writing a book or having babies, whatever it might be, and want to get that working for you automatically. So that's what the webinar is all about. It's called How to Find Your First 10,000 Readers. Subtitle, Automate Your Author Marketing. Joanna's going to have a link for you, I think. Yes. Tell us where the link's going
to
go.
Yeah, so if you go to thecreativepen.com/Nick17, N-I-C-K-1-7, thecreativepen.com/Nick17. That will be in the show notes and everywhere and like on the screen or whatever. So what happens in those webinars, and people often come again because they enjoy our banter, I tend to have a glass of wine. Nick does all the work and then we both do Q&A afterwards. So really fantastic quality information that you can action right now. And then also that live Q&A together. So that is on Wednesday, 14th of June at 3 p.m. US Eastern, 8 p.m. UK. And yes, sign up thecreativepen.com/Nick17. Right. So Nick, thank you so much for your time. As ever, it's been awesome. And you and I could just go on all day, but we'll save it for the webinar.
Yeah. It's always good with a glass of wine.
It is indeed. All right. Thanks so much for your time.
Pleasure.
I hope you enjoyed the interview with Nick and had some lessons learned about sourcing out your own time and automation. You can come and join us on the webinar about automating your author marketing and finding your first 10,000 readers on Wednesday, 14th of June. You can find all the details at thecreativepen.com/Nick17, N-I-C-K-1-7. And yes, if you sign up, you can get the replay if you can't join us live. Okay, so next week, I'm talking about changes in the publishing industry and launching non-fiction books with Dan Blank. It's also a pretty big week in the UK as we have a general election that is shaping up to be quite different than first expected. So more change ahead. Yes, if you are distracted by all the politics that's going on these days, just remember, keep writing and, you know, that's the way through if it all gets a bit stressful. So happy writing week and I'll see you next time. Thanks for listening today. I hope you found it helpful. You might also like the backlist episodes and show notes available at thecreativepen.com/podcast. You can also get your free author blueprint at thecreativepen.com/blueprint. If you'd like to connect, you can tweet me at The Creative Pen or find me on Facebook at The Creative Pen. See you next time.